Okay, we got quorum, so we're going to get going. We got three bills in a short 1 hour. So, is Representative Smith in the room? Seeing that he's not, we'll go with my bill first. You want to come? Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that House File 2500 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. And is Representative Mullery here today? Or he was in here earlier. Okay, members, I want to call your attention to the A1 amendment. A1 amendment did not meet the 24-hour rule. And so I talked to Representative Mullery on this on the floor and mentioned to him that it's my thought that this is not controversial. This came from suggestions from Mr. Pender. The bill itself is modeled after legislation that's in place in other states. And Mr. Pender noted that some of the stuff did not meet really fit Minnesota law, and so he crafted this amendment to take care of that. I leave it up to the committee if there's a strong objection to adopting the amendment since it didn't meet the 24-hour rule. That's fine. We'll hear the bill and lay it over till next week, but I do not think it's of controversial nature, but I'll leave that up to members of the committee. Maybe Mr. Pender could discuss the technical changes or whatever changes that this makes.
Mr. Pender? Mr. Chair, I'll just quickly go through this A1 amendment here. A lot of it is just little technical little things, adding commas and stuff like that. The things that are substantive are on page 1, line 6. It deletes language that would have applied this bill to the small employer market, and that was never intended. That was put in by error. And then on line 1.8, the language that was deleted there says that if a policyholder is owed a refund under this law of $10 or less, that money gets aggregated and put into the state treasury. And this change says that it gets credited to the policyholder's account so that the state doesn't get that money. And then page 1, lines 10 to 14 involve moving some language that's in section 1 of the bill, moving it to a different place and replacing language that's similar and seems unnecessary, and then taking that out of subdivision section 1, that relates to up at the top there on page 1, line 2, delete section 1, because there was no reason for it to be in there except for that language, and this amendment moves it. And then the rest of the amendment is on page 3, adding language to a section that regulates the individual market. And what this deals with is the fact that the bill, as introduced, dealt with complying with the minimum loss ratio requirements in our state law, but didn't do anything about complying with the rating bands in the individual market, where we have limits on how high and how low the premiums can be. They have to be within a certain range of based on various underwriting things. And so what this does is add the loss what I call here a rating practices guarantee to the loss ratio guarantee, so that you can do both of them and take care of both of them, because otherwise the bill wouldn't have worked, because an insurer would submit the loss ratio guarantee and the state would still have prior approval over whether they meet the rating band. So this is a way of making the bill work by adding this extra component to it.
The author has requested that we adopt this, even though the 24-hour rule could apply. Discussion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there's no objection, I'd move the A1 amendment be adopted.
So moved. Do we need a vote on that one?
you know, we'd have to vote to adopt it.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Since we are in an abbreviated time period, I think I'd like to go directly to our testifiers, and they can describe the bill in more detail.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota, and I will also be very brief and then have Mr. Scott Dyke here with Assurant. We'll give a little more detail from operationally, but this bill really, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is a response to ongoing questions about attempting to help grow competition choices in the marketplace in terms of the health insurance marketplace. Everyone's aware of the statistics and the numbers. The individual health insurance market in Minnesota is very concentrated. The top company rates 65% of the market. MCHA is the number two company, and the numbers get small quickly. We're looking for avenues and ways to help facilitate. This is a law, we believe it's non-controversial, it's optional. It's adding an additional rate filing procedure to Minnesota law that's had some success in other states, and we've met with Commerce, and they don't have any objections to this being part of the, you know, the state regulatory system and the options. And so maybe it'd be best, Mr. Chairman, that's the brief overview, and I'd be happy to provide more and stand for questions, but have Mr. Dyke do a little better work walkthrough of what this bill provides, and then stand for questions from the committee.
Proceed. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee, my name is Scott Zeit, representing Assurant Health, based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're here in support of House File 2500 as a means of bolstering competition in the Minnesota individual medical market. Assurant Health is based, as I said, out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We have two licensed carriers operating in the state of Minnesota, one being Time Insurance Company, the other being John Alden Life Insurance Company, offering a variety of products to your consumers, including HSAs. We currently insure approximately 35,000 customers in the state of Minnesota. Our organization has spent probably the past 15 years looking at opportunities to reform markets throughout the country. We've identified basically three criteria for a viable competitive market. First being flexible rating laws, which the state of Minnesota already has. Second, being a risk pool, which the state of Minnesota already has. The third being an option for speed to market, so that carriers like Assurant Health and other competitors in the market have the ability to respond to market trends, respond to competitive threats, and also consumer demands. What House File 2500 presents is an alternative file and use option for existing carriers and any other carrier that would be looking to enter this market based on a guaranteed lifetime loss ratio. What a carrier would be required to do is, for all approved forms that include the guaranteed lifetime loss ratio, is to file its rates, certify them through an external auditor, and provide basically spread the loss ratio on a 10-year schedule, 8 to 10-year schedule. Each year, we're required through an independent audit annually to certify that we're meeting the standards that we told the department that we would meet. If we exceed our expectations, we would be required to refund the money to the customer. If we don't meet our expectations, the penalty is not on the consumer, it's on the carrier, and we just move forward to the next year. The basis to this is that we were able to spread our operational risk throughout a 10-year, 8 to 10-year period. Competitively, the advantages are, again, this will attract carriers into your market. We've seen this in states such as Kentucky and New Hampshire, both states where our organization was engaged in reforming the laws. In terms of consumer protections, which we think are built in this, as I mentioned, number one, it's going to bring new competitors in, bringing more affordable, dynamic products, and it's going to allow the existing carriers, also the flexibility to compete against new carriers, allow us to bring new test products into the market, which we currently really don't do. Second of all, obviously, it creates that standard that if our operating expenses exceed our expectations, we will refund the money. So again, we think this is a balance between creating competition in your market or bolstering competition and increasing consumer protections in your market, and I would ask that you support this. So I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Mr. Sykes, I have a question about the 10-year schedule. When you talk about a lifetime loss ratio, is that actually 10 years, a revolving 10 years? You talked about an 8 to 10 year. Are you, the lifetime ratio, is that actually a 10-year ratio?
Basically, the way it works is that, like, we'll submit a schedule that it's an average 65% loss ratio over the course of a carrier can choose, but it's typically 8 to 10 years. So in the early part of a form, the loss ratio might be 52%. And as a form ages, the loss ratio is increased because you typically see higher claims. So you would average that at 65. So in the beginning of the form, if we see lower than expected claims, we refund the money. If we see higher, we just spread that throughout the life of the form. We don't penalize the consumer. We just absorb it into our losses.
Any more questions? Yeah, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to our guests, and Representative Wilkham. This is an area I'm still learning on. Loss ratios may not be my expertise, but I do try and understand what it really does mean for the consumer. And I heard you say that you thought this would bring in new players, bring in new products, test out new things. And, you know, as a consumer, I want choices, but I kind of want a limit to the choices and a range of choices that I can understand. Because when people get overwhelmed, that's when they don't make choices. I think that's why a lot of people don't sign up for deferred compensation and 401k, because they've got more choices than they can deal with and they put off key decisions. And so could you explain to me, or maybe the Department of Commerce, you know, sort of what oversight there is on those new products, how they're explained to consumers, how a consumer can make wise comparison choices between these new products as they're rolled out?
Mr. Zeitz?
Mr. Chairman, all of the other statutes that are currently in place about readability, any and all disclosure of mandates, what we communicate to consumers, the contracts, the files, the forms that are filed, all of that continues as is. So to whatever extent today in Minnesota we require regulated health insurers to disclose and to how the documents and contract forms are printed, we don't change how claims are handled. We don't change any of that. We keep all of those requirements, and actually in a meeting this morning with the department, they wanted to verify and make sure that all of the policy forms, contracts, continue to be handled the way they are today, and they will be. So I think there'll be no changes in those regards. This is a more tailored end of the filing system on rates, and so I think from the consumer disclosure and the information, you know, all these contracts all have to be printed and readable and pass the state flesh test in terms of readability of insurance policy. So I don't have right at hand the statutory structure we have in place about disclosures, but none of that is being changed. So whatever we do today, we'll continue to do under House File 2500.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. And again, to our guests and Representative Wilkham. The other issue, I think, is how can this create some chaos in our existing insurance market, in that could we have out-of-state firms that would come in, and because they can spread the risk over 8 to 10 years, a fairly long period of time, could really undercut existing long-term providers in order to, you know, buy the market if they're a large, you know, multi-state company with a lot of assets, come in and sort of buy their way into the market, and then if they're not happy with their results, walk away from Minnesota while they've disrupted the ability of our homegrown carriers and our ongoing providers of health care to continue. I know we've had in the Medicare area, particularly in rural areas, we've had, you know, people come in and offer Medicare products and it didn't prove as profitable as they wanted, and they sort of abandoned people almost in terms of, you know, walking away from the market. And what protections are there to deal with or address those kind of concerns?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I'll give you my spin on that because I've watched the Minnesota healthcare market through a lot of years, from earlier years when there were a lot more companies selling to today when there are a lot fewer companies selling. I can't imagine that the established large market share carriers will be in any way, shape, or form threatened by a new filing option for a company that may come into the market. A company, if they're coming into the market for the first time, is going to run smack into, you know, giant companies with giant market shares have the economic clout, not a new player with no market in the state. So my perspective is that I hear more often we're trying to figure out ways to grow competition, not keep it where it's at. And the consolidation of the healthcare market, and I know it's going on in a lot of states, we have a particularly consolidated market. As I indicated, the top individual company has 65% of the Minnesota individual market. There aren't many lines of insurance. Pick anyone, in fact. And I don't think you'll come anywhere near a 65% consolidation. So, you know, looking at new competitors coming in, I just don't believe at all there's any jeopardy or risk or threat to anybody with those kinds of market shares. I don't think that's going to happen.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Wilkins. And just to that point, I don't think this bill changes that kind of paradigm at all anyway. If someone wanted to come into the market and buy market share, they'd have to sink in an incredible amount of capital to do that. So they can do that right now if they chose, but they don't. Part of the problem is in getting some of the smaller players into the market in Minnesota is it's very hard to get the kind of discounts, the volume discounts that the bigger players get. So this gives them some flexibility on product, but it doesn't really give anybody one advantage over another as far as buying market share.
Representative Powell first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and whoever wants to answer this. What about the time-to-market piece of this? This has been tried in other states, I take it, from the discussion that we had, and what's been their experience with rolling out products quicker than we're able to do now here in Minnesota.
Mr. Zeitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speed to market is critical, and although in this bill, the Commerce Department will continue to have authority over forms. The other states, the departments have relinquished authority to approve forms. So there is a little bit of a difference between what this bill is accomplishing and what the other states have done. However, when we talk about bringing in competition, if you look at a small state like New Hampshire, it now has 8 licensed carriers writing individual medical in the state, which has a population of I don't know what the total population is, but it's a lot less than Minnesota. But it has a very viable, competitive market. When we look at states where we want to bring new products in, we rate states. We tier them. Where we say, we're going to go to Colorado. We'll try it in Colorado. Minnesota is not viewed that way. This bill bringing competition in, others looking in from outside, looking at how Assurant is operating, and seeing that we are getting products to market faster, we're more competitive against the bigger players in the market, that's going to bring a positive light on your market and attract carriers. And I do want to address one other question. We're not a large player. We do have 9% market share. And the idea of bringing in competition is a direct threat to the market share we have. However, we believe in competition. We believe it's right for the consumer. We know that if the larger carriers that are now back in the individual medical market that get better discounts than we do, they come in, that's a direct threat, but it's right for the consumer. It's right for your market, and we're willing to sharpen our pencils and toughen it out and compete against anybody who comes in the market. Because like I said, we've been doing this on a national basis. We are the carrier that's been coming in. This is a unique position from us. It's very difficult to say we oppose this because it's good for the consumer. So we support it. We're willing to sharpen our pencils, tough it out against anybody that wants to come in the market, and we'll compete head-to-head.
Well, with that, Representative Wilkin, do you renew your motion that this be passed as amended? and we refer to the general register?
Yes, to do, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Or Mr. Chairman.
That's fine.
Gave you a promotion. don't tell Swigum I said that. I'll be in trouble.
All in favor say...
Who's on there?
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I'm going to ask a question.
Representative Rukavina, in reference to what?
The bill.
Go ahead, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilkins, so is the Department of Commerce supporting this bill?
Representative Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I don't think they haven't taken a position one way or another. They don't oppose. They haven't expressed any support one way or another.
Mr. Chairman, if I can follow up, because I had to meet with
Mr. Johnson,
the Commerce Department, and to go through, they have no objections to it. In other words, they can administer and have walked through it with us, asked questions about how it impacts, in particular, the form filing end of it, and they wanted to make certain that this does not change the form filing end of the health insurance, and it's our commitment that it does not. And with that, then, officially said they don't have, they're not opposed to it, so... We've done that on other bills if we were initiating something to run it by the agency, and they have no objections to it.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Johnson, under current law, at the end of the year, I see under this bill that at the end of the year, if there's any refund, then it's going to be paid then, right? Under
Mr.
current
Johnson.
How does it work, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Department of Commerce, go ahead. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Brooks, this as we've walked through, this actually is and nobody has to use it. It's optional, and it actually builds in a new requirement of under this law that the companies would have to refund monies directly to the customer to meet that standard that they've committed to. So it's new. That's not the case today in Minnesota. There's nothing in current law that requires literally a refunding of money to the consumer to get the value. And this asset, it's a different approach at it. And again, it's the limited, but it's been some states where it's been tried to set a positive market effect, which is what we're here to encourage. We believe it's worth trying to see if it'll have an effect similarly on the marketplace.
And so, Mr. Chair, currently then the Department of Commerce must have some oversight somewhere currently, and would they still have the same oversight?
Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as we've walked through it, the answer is yes in terms of what the companies, and as we walk through the bill, there's a filing certification procedure using an outside auditor or vendor in terms of the contract, the terms. The forms will continue to be filed as they are today. And so from the agency's overview and review of what the contract, what we're selling, that stays as it is on that part.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I apologize for being late. I have some because of the League of Minnesota City.
I always do get a little nervous when insurance companies write bills around here. And the Department of Commerce isn't seem to be involved. And having just gone through the first month or so of my mother's billing from Medicare Part D, I do get a little nervous when insurance companies write bills. So.
Representative Rukavina, we want to give you every opportunity. To
I'm sure
if your
Mr.
Mind.
Johnson wrote this bill, it's just great for the consumer.
Representative Gunther, moving right along. Did you still have a comment? No. Okay. With that, Representative Wilkin renews his motion that this be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the general register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Representative Smith here. Okay. While he's coming up to the table, Representative Gazelka moves the minutes of the February 22nd, February 28th, and March 2nd meeting.
Yep.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Smith, your bill is going to your committee next, so I will move House File 2916 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm going to be brief. I also have with me Mr. Mike Stockstead, who is with Minnesota Professional Firefighters International Association of Firefighters, to be more specific on any description of the bill and to help answer questions. We also have, Mr. Chairman, representatives in the audience of Professional Firefighters, the Fire Chiefs Association, the Fire Departments Association, if there's questions or testimony, as well as, I believe, representatives of the Insurance Federation and the Mutuals are here. And it's my understanding the Township Association, the League of Cities are aware of this bill and have no objection. Mr. Chairman, in just a couple minutes, I want to give you a fast overview and then ask Mr. Stockstead to present. The fire safety account in this bill will update and address the rapidly changing needs of the fire service. The current 0.5% gross premium fire insurance tax that exists was implemented nearly 70 years ago in order to fund a state fire marshal's office. The current fire insurance tax has not been increased for over 70 years. This previously dedicated tax was undedicated around 1980 at the very same times that there were increasing needs and broadening needs in fire safety programs and training in the state of Minnesota. The industries have come together over the interim. As you may recall, Mr. Chairman, this bill, not this bill, but the preceding bill was introduced in the last session and stopped in committee before the end of session. And so over the interim, the industries have come together and discussed this, literally hundreds of hours in crafting this agreement that's before you in House File 2916. The proposal, I believe, will benefit all the residents of Minnesota. We've come up with a means of providing additional funds for the fire service and for public safety by repealing the current fire insurance tax and replacing it with this fire safety account. It will improve the standing also of our Minnesota-based insurance companies by reducing the insurance tax paid out of revenue to other states in the form of a retaliatory tax. The fire safety account in House File 2916 is a dedicated account for the needs of the fire service in Minnesota with respect to prevention, investigation, and education. The surcharge on each policy would replace the current tax, and it's $5.25 per year for a residential policy, $12.50 gradated up to $50 for a commercial policy based on an annual premium cost. I want to give you just a few descriptions and examples of how the money will be spent and some of the basic needs. For example, the State Fire Marshal's Office will be providing assistance the local fire departments through arson investigation, through safety code development, school inspections, fire code enforcement, public safety education, inspections, and licensing of various safety trades. Our hazardous material teams scattered throughout the state will provide identification and mitigation of hazmat situations. Just to give you a smaller picture, Mr. Chairman, it costs $3,200 to outfit a new firefighter with equipment. It costs nearly $3,000 to train a firefighter, not accounting for any personal time he or she may take in any ongoing training required every year. This proposal will increase the funding to fire safety programs while making those firefighters and Minnesota based insurers more competitive specifically the insurers, through the elimination of the retaliatory tax I was referring to. We got a chance to do the right thing for our firefighters in increasingly technological and an increasingly dangerous world, and I think this bill is the right answer, and at that point we're ready for questions, but I would like to introduce Mr. Stockstead at this time.
Mr. Stockstead, do you have a statement you'd like to make?
Mr. Chair, Mike Stockstead, Minnesota Professional Firefighters, basically would be here to answer the questions as Representative Smith said. This bill is actually the culmination of a lot of different efforts. We had originally tried to look at raising the tax, didn't realize what this did with this reciprocity issue, worked with the insurance industry to figure that out, introduced the bill last year that set forth basically a single particular surcharge on all policies. We heard back from some of the smaller businesses that, you know, it would be a little bit unfair. We worked with that. And this, like the representative says, after a couple of years actually of trying to work with everybody and get this thing down to where it can be, we think we've actually developed something that's pretty close to a perfect bill.
Representative Smith, there's an A2 and an A3 amendment. Are those ones that you brought forward? Or A3 is from Representative Rukavina. Okay, I'm told that the A2 is an amendment that was intended for me to offer. Just laid my eyes on it. Apparently it's supposed to clarify that on commercial policies that this is intended for the fire portion of those policies only. Mr. Pender, do you have anything else to add on that?
No, Mr. Chair. The only other thing it does is it inserts the word surcharge in a few extra places just to make it 100% clear that this is not something that can be retaliated against by other states.
Okay, I'll move the A2 amendment and let Representative Smith comment on it.
Mr. Chairman, the A2 amendment, as the author, I do accept that it is a good amendment, and for a couple of reasons. One, it does put the bill in correct shape, and two, it's your amendment.
I appreciate that, Representative Smith. Any comments or questions by the members? All in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Smith, do you have anything further at this time? Or?
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Okay. Do members have questions at this point?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Smith and members, you know, I support this bill because I don't support how the State Fire Marshal's office has been kind of nickeled and dimed as we moved to keep a no new tax pledge and took money from everywhere we could. But I'm curious, you know, how we go from a flat or from a fee. And Representative Smith, you said that this hasn't been increased for 70 years. Yeah, 1937 actually, when we went to the 5.05%. But insurance premiums have gone up drastically since then. My homeowner's insurance when I started, and I might add that I have Palo Farmers Mutual, so I don't think I pay the surcharge. But my insurance has gone up dramatically in the last 10, 15 years on my homeowner's policy, so there must be, I think under the 2% tax, there's $321 million, and that might include the surcharge. I'm not sure. Representative Smith, how much does your bill raise with this new fee that we're going to from what I would think would be a somewhat fair progressive tax at 0.05% of a premium now to a flat fee for homeowners? Do you know how much it raises?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, we do, but I'm going to defer to Mr. Stockstead for the answer.
Mr. Stockstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Recovina, with the rates that are spelled out, the 5.25 and then the scaling, the $12.50 to $50, it's estimated that should bring in about $13 million into the fund.
And, Mr. Chair, Stockstead, what is the 0.05 currently bringing?
Stockstead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Recovina, the last information that we have is in 04 it brought in $6.9 million. In 05 it would be $7.9 million. Based on the large increase in the property insurances from 04 to 06. For example, let me tell you about the firefighters building, which is out on 394, out at 169. In 2004, our policy was $2,750 a year. In 06, it's $5,300. So this would the new fee will be in the top tier. We will actually pay basically $2 a month more than we would have paid. But the difference is it's capped. It's a set fee. I know what it's going to be. So next year when they raise the insurance rates again, that 0.5% doesn't continue to escalate so that the policy doesn't continue to collect more.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, you know, Mr. Stockton, it's not that I don't agree that the fire marshal's office has been hit around here, not by us, but by others, but, you know, I'm concerned about going to fees from what is a more progressive method of doing it. Now, I'm puzzled as to why, Mr. Stockton, and if you wrote this, sir, Stockton, that you graduated and had a prorated type fair fee on commercial property, but not on on residential. Why didn't you, as I have an amendment that does that, why didn't you do that with the homeowners then?
Mr. Stockstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Recovina, that was discussed. It was actually looked at, and the amount that currently is being paid on the most insurance policies, not the average, but most, the $5.25 was very, very minimal to make that difference. The fire safety account is more than funding just the state fire marshal's office. This is also an account that is going to help us with fire training throughout the state of Minnesota, which is going to help some of these communities train new firefighters, recruit new firefighters, and get them the necessary to get going within these fire departments. This is the first time that we would actually have something like this in Minnesota, where our police officers and police departments have it, and our ambulance services currently get assistance on training dollars. We don't have that in the fire service, and this is kind of that step, the first step towards that. Another reason that we kept the residential the same is because within our services, within the residential, everybody gets the same service. Our firefighters need to be just as trained, just as equipped, and just prepared for a $400 house as we are for a $4 million house. And actually, the breakdown of services that we provide in different areas of town is also a leveling factor. So there's just not that much difference within a residential from what they prepare or get from a firefighter than does the next or the neighbor or the neighboring community.
Well, Mr. Chair,
wouldn't
it be the same for a business if you fight a fire at a business that pays a $600 premium or a $1,500 premium? Isn't it basically the same method of fighting the fire, if that's the rationale you're using?
Mr. Stotts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Recovina. Actually, the training is somewhat the same for the basics. Unfortunately, in our commercial areas, we do have different things. We have setups. We have different response to those different facilities. And believe it or not, sometimes it is, in fact, actually does come out based on price. If you look at a very large complex that has a campus, for example, if you look at those types of places where they have three or four different buildings, you can take the Methodist Hospital campus or Park Nicollet. There is differences. You've got actually two communities that are responding to that area rather than a single one. There's cross-training between those two communities. There's drills. There's working together within that. So there's actually additional work to do on that. The inspections, you're doing commercial inspections on those properties where you don't do them in the residential. So our commercial properties actually do have a larger draw on our fire service than do our residentials.
Maybe to Representative Smith, you're not doing anything differently to the 2% tax that we pay on our insurance, right? That's still... Who knows the answer to that? Mr. Stockstead?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Recovina, no, those are two separate issues. The The 2% is a completely different section of the law, a different basis than what we're talking about here, which is the fire tax. The half percent fire tax is different than what you're referring to as the 2% fire state aid for our pensions. That we're touching nothing on. We're doing nothing with it. That stays just like it is.
But, Mr. Chair, using my progressive method of taxation, which, you know, I can understand you probably don't agree with, Mr. Stockton, but, you know, that's staying the same. And so we're funding the firemen's pensions with that still. And it's progressive. And so $1 million house in Minnetonka might pay a lot more than a $40,000 house in Pearl. Okay? And I think that was the concept behind the fair tax for the fire marshal fund, too. And now you're moving out of that. And I don't understand whether you fight the fire or not. The fact of the matter is that person in Pearl might now is paying is half a percent on a $600 policy or $500 policy. It's their fee is doubling. And the person that's paying a 5%, 5/10 of a percent tax on a $1 million house is paying, help me out, $50 or $50. So, you know, all of a sudden you're getting this huge shrinkage for people who progressively can pay taxes as opposed to, that $40,000 house in Perm that might be paying a $500 insurance policy. And to me, Mr. Chair and members, it's just indicative of what's gone on around here. You take money from a fair tax, you steal it to pay for a tax pledge, now all of a sudden you come up with an idea that it's very difficult for anybody to oppose because then you're going to be opposing firefighters. Well, I'll tell you what, I've been defending firefighters in my professional fire department since the former minority leader, Mr. Schreiber, was constantly attacking the Virginia Professional Fire Department. I don't know, you know, why I guess we didn't need a professional fire department. We could have waited for Minneapolis to show up. But, you know, I've been defending them for years, long before 9/11 and everything else, because I know the tough job they have. But, you know, to do this, Mr. Stocks, is totally unfair. And I'm not going to offer this amendment because I'm going to work with Representative Smith because I know he's got range roots and he's probably got some fair tax concepts in his brain yet in there somewhere. And so we're going to work on it. But it's not fair. And the argument you gave me, Mr. Stocks, is totally skewed to say that, you know, the $1 million house, no, the $1 million business then got to have the same firefighting as the $100,000 Main Street business. But you're not using that concept. You're graduating it and prorating it, whatever you want to call it. But the, you know, those huge cabins that are going up in north of my house on Lake Vermilion that are worth $2 million, and we had to give them tax breaks because they came up there and built the $2 million cabin are going to pay the same as Auntie Gloria's house in Ridgewood in Virginia that you couldn't sell for $40,000. No, you know that ain't right. I'm sorry, it isn't right. I'll withdraw the amendment for now, but I'm going to work with Mr. Smith, Representative Smith, and Mr. Stockton. We're going to have this discussion again somewhere along the line, because I don't like this philosophy where ma and pa and lower middle class and the middle class got to pay, I don't care if it's $2 or $3 or $5 a year. It's just, you know, adding to that $1 billion of fees that you guys hit in the last couple of budgets around here, so... Go ahead, I'm going to support it, but it's totally wrong, and I'm going to work to have some fair funding for this and not Mr. Stockton's full of persuasion.
You done?
I'm done.
Thank you. Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to get at this figures. Did you say that it was $13 million additional raised per year by this, or exactly what did you say?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulray, no, the estimate that we have is it will raise $13 million. It's not additional, that's the total amount.
Per year?
Correct. And this is, now we're talking about the fire tax issue that we're discussing here, not the fire state aid.
No, Mr. Chairman, you're talking about the fire state aid is the one for the pensions?
Yes, yes.
I am, okay, I'm not confusing those. And so this will raise $13 million per year,
And did you say the old tax was roughly $7 million per year? I'm just trying to check and get these numbers.
Representative Mower, yes. The information that we have right now is that 2004, this is calendar year now, 2004 calendar year, it was $6.9 million, and we're hearing that in 2005 calendar year, they're estimating it'll be $7.9.
So roughly it's an additional $6 million tax, roughly. Just rough,
Mr. Chairman.
Well, within a tenth or something like that. Okay.
Further questions from members?
I got
Representative Gazelka and Representative Hoffa.
Mr. Chair, do we have a fiscal note on this one yet to verify his numbers?
Representative Gazelka, I think the fiscal note won't be here until Mr. Smith, Representative Smith's committee, where they'll deal with the fiscal impact. And they'll have, I think, more firm numbers.
Are we going, Mr. Chair, are we going to have anybody from the business community talk about this NFIB or others?
We do have Mr. Hickey is ready to testify after we go through some good questions here. Representative Mallory, is it to that point? Otherwise, Representative Loeffler was waiting. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Smith, or perhaps Mr. Stockton. Does this change? I know it almost doubles the amount of money needed for the fire services, and I support increased investment in that area. But how does it change the balance of responsibility of funding this? Is it pretty much the same ratio of, you know, dollars contributed by homeowners versus business owners? Does somebody get a big tax break in terms of, or fee break, in terms of how the new fee is assessed? I'd really like to understand before I vote on this, kind of like, does it kind of keep the current burdens the same, or is it a real shift?
Mr. Foxton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, in our crafting of where we're going with this and the discussions that we have, our understanding is that it keeps that burden approximately the same. There's 1.67 million residential policies, and there's about 200,000 commercial policies. And what we did in crafting the numbers and getting to where we were, we used the current numbers to get to the 6.9 million, back them out and said, okay, to do the same thing on the same scale of percentage, what would it have to be for these policies? And this is how we came up with the 5.25 and then the scale for the commercial property.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stockton, I was trying to figure this out. The money over 250, I believe, goes to the Department of Public Safety. How does that all then go into fire training, or can the department, I guess I'm trying to figure out if we're ending up funding meth treatment or sex offenders or whatever needs money from the Department of Public Safety, or if this is all going into actual fire training and things like that, or equipment.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you actually for that question, because this is probably one of the most exciting parts of the bill. Along with this bill is the creation of a fire advisory committee to the Department of Public Safety. And the commissioner, in the meetings that we had with the department, has acquiesced to only having appropriations that were from recommendations from the committee. So if it's something, for example, meth treatment for patients or something to that effect, that wouldn't have come from the committee, then under this particular section of law, that would not be an appropriate appropriation to bring forward in his budget. So the makeup of this committee is found on page 2. It includes not only the industry, but it includes the cities and the townships, as well as the insurance industry. So each year they'll be able to sit down with the commissioner's office, look at the needs of the fire service, and it will grow along with the fire service in the years to come to decide what is actually in front of the fire service's issues this year. Because as Representative Rucavina did point out, there have been several issues that we have had to address over the past several years, and very unfortunately, some of those issues have hit in a particular region of the state that haven't necessarily been in other regions of the state. Well, this body will be able to identify those things and actually sit and make those recommendations.
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I haven't had a chance to look at the committee structure, but I didn't hear you say anything about consumers in the structure. Are there any consumers in this committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, there's not. This is a committee made up of the if you will, the experts in the industry. It's, again, on page 2, I think, starting at about 2.11. It's taking the needs of the fire service, the involvement of the communities, the people that provide this service. They are responsible to their own communities for what those needs are and must provide those services to our communities. So it is this group that comes forward with budget recommendations to the department.
But Representative Goodman. Chair and Mr. Stockstedt, but it's the consumers that are paying the bill on this and paying for the services to your department, and I would like to see somebody other than the industry specialists or the leagues and so forth that have some input into this. The second thing is I would like to know from maybe somebody in the insurance industry, I don't know if it would be Mr. Johnson or who, what the range is currently on premiums for homeowners insurance. So along the lines of what Representative Rukavina was asking, I'd just kind of like to know what that range is of what people are currently paying now into the fund and what they at different home values and so forth. So can somebody answer that question for me?
Ms. Johnson? My members, we do have one more bill up.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Goodwin, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. The statewide average homeowner's premium, I was just checking that, it's slightly over $800. So in other words, so there's much more. The translation, the bill, and the .05, you know, and the 5.25 compared to what today compared to under the bill. As Author Representative Smith and has indicated, it's close to a push, if you will, in terms of the numbers, and the range is much narrower in the homeowners. It clearly is a range, but it's much narrower than you see on the commercial side. The commercial has got dramatically larger swings in those premiums and the values and the coverages that are bought. I don't know if that's responsive, but at least that's the average number in terms of homeowners statewide in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson, that's not what I asked. I asked what the low end is and what the high end is, not what the average.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I will. I don't have Representative Davis. There are others that are agents. I can and will follow up with you and get you the numbers. In other words, if you have a home with a market value that you're insuring, pick a dollar amount. You know, then I don't have a rate book here to give you what that. I guess the top to bottom, or at least some estimate of that. Clearly, it's going to a low market. You know, the you're insuring that market value, and the lower dollar market values. I honestly don't know what the annual premium is on a homeowner's of a house of X amount of. I don't know that. I know that typically, unlike a $250,000-$300,000, let's say suburban home. Something like that. That's probably in the $1,000 a year category. And you do see some variations depending on, because people make choices on deductibles, and some people choose much higher deductibles than others and dramatically drop what that annual premium is. So even on the similar valued home, what the consumer is choosing to buy will make a considerable difference in the annual premiums, even on the same market value house.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Johnson, I would like the answer to that before I can make a decision on how to vote on this bill, because I'm sure somebody in here knows, and I'm actually quite surprised you don't know what the range is in insurance rates, because then we would really get a good handle on how much reduction some of the high value homes were getting under this proposal versus those folks in my district that are seniors and already have their property taxes increased dramatically because of what this legislature has done, and now are going to see that they're going to start to be paying for more higher value homes that they don't have.
Mr. Chairman, if I had information, I would provide. I don't have information beyond what I indicated, so I can't provide it.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Johnson, you're a walking encyclopedia on insurance, and I just can't believe. But when you use the average, you know, averages are very misleading at times. So you can walk up and say the average homeowner's insurance is $800 statewide. You know, that's like saying the average size and height and weight of the range delegation is 235 pounds and 6'1", because it is. But I walk into the room and everybody says, "What happened?" You know?
I say, "What's going to happen?"
Yeah. I might be getting close to the weight on the average, but certainly not on the height. You know, it's like the average income tax cut back in 2002 was going to be $600, and my friends got $50 or $100 and asked me what was wrong. Well, I'll tell you why, because there's 55 people in 2002, the top 55 taxpayers got $7.8 million back. So averages don't mean anything. But I want to ask you, Mr. Johnson, one question. Let's take a place like Minntac Mine in Mountain Iron, Minnesota, that stretches for 13, 14 miles and got all these huge buildings. If Virginia and Hibbing has to go there to fight a fire, it's going to be an extremely difficult, and every volunteer fire department would have to be there too. Now, I don't know, is Minntac U.S. Steel self-insured? And how much does a self-insured person pay to train those Virginia professional firefighters to fight that fire? Tell us that answer.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that.
Good.
I don't know, well, let me say this. I don't know the risk management, what that company does. I don't know that because I've never talked to them. I'm confident, having said that, they don't buy insurance, that they self-insure it, as most large corporations are going to do on their property coverage. And this does not apply to that. It can't, because all this can do is apply to the regulated or to entities, people or businesses that buy insurance policies. Many, many, many businesses in Minnesota and around the country self-insure their commercial risk property, and this doesn't apply to that. So the surcharge doesn't attach to some company that pays for losses out of their own checkbook, because it doesn't, the nature of how they're choosing to do that. So,
Mr. Johnson, isn't that the same as current law?
Mr. Chairman, this doesn't change any of that. This, in other words, companies' choices as to how they handle their risk, and large businesses choose. This is not a dissimilar issue than when we talk about health insurance and other areas where large corporations have the option, and they choose to do it because they want to manage the risk themselves, not pay money to an insurance company, and it's legal, and so they choose to do that. So just like if a large company self-insures their health insurance, the ERISA exemption, state laws don't apply because they can't legally apply to them. And so if a company chooses to self-insure their property, which they can, and if they choose to do that, then these laws don't apply to them.
So I'd like to get Mr. Hickey up to give his testimony, because I'm trying to reserve the last 2 minutes for the thickest bill in the file, if you don't mind. And we can get back to if you have questions after that.
To the final point.
Okay.
Mr. Stock said then the argument that fighting the biggest fires is the reason why the commercial one is graduated fairly, I think, then is a bogus argument, because some of the biggest facilities, including that hospital or whatever you mentioned, campus, is probably maybe self-insured, so they're not paying anything to train firefighters to fight fires.
Not now or not after the bill. Either way. Mr. Hickey. Please introduce yourself, and if you could be as brief as possible, I'd appreciate it.
I'm Mike Hickey, the National Federation of Independent Business, and I appreciate the chance to make a few brief comments. We are one of the most affected constituencies on the business side of this bill, with 17,000 members statewide, a significant member base in all your districts. We certainly understand the goal, and it's an important one, but we're concerned about who's funding this. And we're concerned about all these funding arrangements. I think Representative Rukavina is getting at a good point here, which I'm going to certainly spell out clearly. Concerned about all these funding arrangements that just touch those in the state-regulated market, which means increasingly
pretty much just small business and some middle-sized businesses. And that's what this program does. We're adding on to it. People are going to receive increases. Some of them are dramatic in a percentage standpoint. I clearly acknowledge going from maybe $2.50 to $25, going from about $5 to $50 is not devastating in terms of dollars, but it is a dramatic increase. And small employers are struggling to provide their property insurance. And, you know, frankly, members, we just can't sit back and say, hey, great, go ahead, pile a little more on. Because, and I acknowledge it's little, but, you know, small employers are really struggling to meet insurance on all levels. And so that's our first concern, who's paying it. And the large self-insured companies are not paying it. And Representative Rukavina, you're hitting a good point there. And I wish we could find a way to make all the business, all the employers in this state contribute to these type of things, because we're going to start creating more situations like MCHA. We have a terrible situation with MCHA that's lingered for a couple decades. Mr. Chairman, you've been instrumental in trying to pass this. You've even advocated cigarette tax hikes, which probably weren't your... okay, we won't mention that. Which probably weren't your preferred way to... We won't mention it again. Which probably weren't your preferred way to address it, and there's been bipartisan support to try to help small business out with this very inequitable MCHA assessment that, once again, only falls on those in the state-regulated market, doesn't touch the largest, richest companies in the state. So here we go with a small step in that direction. I acknowledge small. But, we should understand the goal is important. But I really urge you to find another way to fund this. And small employers really don't need their property insurance hiked for these types of reasons this year.
Questions, Representative Mueller?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's scary because I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Hickey on this. I'm very concerned.
Reflected. Mr. Chairman, that's the old North Minneapolis Coalition, and my time in North Minneapolis goes back quite a ways.
The old St. Austin Coalition. And I think there are other ways we could look at, Mr. Hickey, and I'm sure you could figure out ways to do it other than just buy an insurance company and do that. I'm going to, for brevity, I'm going to skip my question for Mr. Stock whatever, Stead or whatever. I'll ask him later.
Representative David.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I think we should support this bill, move it out of here. This is a policy committee. I don't hear anybody disagreeing on the policy that we should have a dedicated fund for the firefighters and their training. So I would suggest we bring it to a vote, and it's got a ways to go. There's finance committees, and that can be worked on down the road, but I think we should get it out of here.
I suspect there will be quite a bit of discussion in Representative Smith's committee about exactly the funding mechanism, and that'll be it. I believe that's it for Representative
Gazelka. I'm willing to move it out of here, but I am concerned about how small businesses are treated, and if that didn't change, I don't know that I could support it on the House floor.
Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, I think Representative Davids is maybe helping confuse us on this. I think Mr. Hickey makes a very valid point, and I think that's part of the policy committee as to how this is funded. The rate may be for the finance committee, but how this is funded, whether it's through this type of insurance tack on or some other way to do this, I think would be for the policy committee.
Fair enough. Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis and Goodwin, and then we're taking a vote.
Okay. Very, very briefly, I'm all for hearing Representative Mueller and Rukavina agree with Mr. Hickey. I have no problem with that.
Representative Goodwin.
I have a question. Maybe, Mr. Chair, you could even answer this for me. Why aren't we charging corporations and big businesses? I understand that you're saying under ERISA you can't put it on their insurance policy, but you could certainly assess them for funds for the... I don't know why you couldn't assess them. So maybe you can explain to me why they couldn't be assessed for some of the firefighting services.
Well, they might be able to out of the tax committee, but this is an assessment. We're talking about the difference between a tax and a fee put on insurance policies. That's the purview of this committee. That's why we're talking about that here. And since they don't buy insurance policies, there's nothing to assess. Throw a bill into the tax committee. I'm sure Representative Krenke will entertain that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
We've got to take a vote because we've got another bill. So the chair renews.
Mr. Chair, you're not cutting off discussion.
Yes, I am. It's 2:15, and we've had quite a bit of business on that. Chair renews his motion that House File 2916 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time now and also on the floor. Thank you.
Representative Atkins moves that House File 2514 be recommended to pass and be referred to as going civil law.
I'm not aware of any other request for it, Mr. Chair. I was of the impression that it was going to the General Register. I'll go anywhere you want me to go, but
for a second. I know that anyone else.
Well, we're talking about that. I do have one author's amendment. It's the AO 6-1144.
Okay. It is the General Register. Representative Atkins moves the AO 4 amendment. Representative Atkins, should we just put that in the shape that you want to talk about it?
Yeah, that's all it does, Your Honor.
Okay.
Here.
All right.
And I will
get that on tape. For the 1144 amendment?
The 1144 amendment.
Okay, all in favor of that amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Atkins.
Thank you for your indulgence. I understand the time. With respect to that, this is a peace in the valley kind of bill. It's endorsed by everybody under the sun, from the Bar Association, New York Stock Exchange, consumers, the department, everybody. It's a bipartisan bill put forth by myself, Chair Wilkins, members on both sides of the aisle. It updates a Uniform Securities Act that was first put in place in 1956, updated in 1985. Fits the federal legislation hand in glove. Picks up where the federal securities law lets off. We have situations involving securities and fraudulent activities, for example, that would not be enforced had it not been for the existence of the state law. The desire is to have uniform laws so that every state can interact well together. With that, I would appreciate your support. I do have the dream team as far as securities lawyers with us here today, and they're certainly prepared to answer any questions.
Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, I imagine you told us everything you know about this bill, but I have one question. Where's your bow tie?
when it comes to the floor, Your Honor, Mr. Representative Mueller, when it comes to the floor, I'm going to have one.
We've got that on tape. Further questions from members? You ready?
Okay. Renew my motion.
Representative Atkins renews his motion that House File 2514, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair and members.
And we are adjourned.